This is a speaker meeting, and the theme of this meeting is staying abstinent throughout the holidays. We are very happy to introduce our speaker for this meeting. She will be joining us from the Overeaters Anonymous US. Please go ahead and unmute Melissa C.
Hi, thank you. Thanks so much. Hi, everybody. My name is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York, and it's a pleasure to be all the way here with you guys in Sweden without having to get my passport, right? Super. So before I start talking on this specific topic about, you know, being abstinent throughout the holidays, I always like to share my photos when I speak before people, because I think what happens when I share my pictures is it's a visual representation of what it looks like to have a miracle, right? Which is what this program entails me, that I must have a miracle. That's the only thing. My step one understanding is that if I'm truly powerless and unmanageable, then I must have something much greater than me to come in and intervene on my behalf, right? And step one in the AA 12 and 12 says only an act of providence. So my only shot is a miracle. That's it. And the reason I like to show my pictures is because how often do we actually get to see a visual of what a miracle looks like? And here's the great thing that happens is that after I share it, I see the body language of the participants change and people lean in a little closer. And that's good news, because hopefully what I'm going to, you know, share afterwards is directions for your own way to create a miracle, right? And we're lucky because we have 12 steps that, when done correctly, completely, and in order, create a miracle. Like, we have the recipe, we have step-by-step directions to how to have a miracle. So I'm going to show my pictures, and I'm going to kind of walk you through a little bit of what was happening for me at that time, what was going on for me. So this is, here we go. So this is me when I had just given birth to my daughter. She's going to be 21 in May. So we were really happy. I've been struggling with morbid obesity most of my life. I had periods where I had lost weight, had a lot of management and control, and regained it. And at this point, when I had my daughter, I was on the upswing. Being pregnant was a great reason to eat. But I thought the day I was holding her, I remembered thinking, I was exhausted. I was thinking that, but I was overjoyed. I really was overjoyed. And you could see there's a lot of love between my husband and myself. We had this new baby. I was so happy. I thought, there's no way that I'm going to continue to overeat. Surely I'll stop eating now because I'm happy. And yet in the picture next to it, if you're able to see that photo, I am bigger. She got older. And I got heavier. So and we're still there in love, right? I still have like loving relationship with my husband. And I, having a good relationship did not save me from this disease either. This is us continuing. I had periods of dieting, always regaining. We often spent a lot of our time eating out. That was a big part of what we did. And I think, you know, when food is calling the shots, when food is telling you what to do and where to go, it decides for you what activities you enjoy. So I would have said, we love going out to dinner. And I actually, my husband still really does. Today, I don't so much. It's really not my thing. I will go. I would prefer to eat at home. I like eating at home better. But back then, this is what we did. There's another picture of us in a restaurant sitting together. You know, I would lose some weight always to regain it. And here's me in the red. I mean, I'm having a party at my house that day. And I think if you take a good look, I don't look like I was ready to entertain people. having a party. I could barely brush my hair at that point in my life. I could barely brush my teeth. It was painful living as me. I just felt like owned by food, and everything else that I needed to do to take care of myself was getting shoved into the corner. You know, food took the most important place in my life. And I even look at the background behind me in that photo, and my house didn't look like I was ready to have guests either. I mean, nothing looked, I couldn't keep anything together. And then there's the photo of me next to it on a vacation. I had lost some weight. I was abstinent at this point. And I think this is an important kind of, especially for our topic today about remaining abstinent throughout the holidays, or I would say even throughout vacations or throughout, you know, these sort of different type of scheduled events that happen in our lives. Because on this particular vacation, I was abstinent. And then I picked something up that I knew I shouldn't have. And after that, I was not smiling like this on that vacation. The rest of the vacation was really spent in misery. And it also led me right from that bite, that sip, really it was a sip, to 10 months of uncontrollable eating. These are side-by-side photos that I like to show. This picture of me in the leopard sweater, it was New Year's. It was just about the only thing that fit me. It was my worst period of my life. I had this new child, this new baby. He wasn't a year yet. I wanted him more than anything. We had a lot of loss between our two children. And I wanted this little boy more than anything. And I could not enjoy mothering him because I couldn't hold him. The size of my body made it so difficult to put my arms around him. And he was extremely active. I say was because he's 15 and now he's a lump. Now he's like the most inactive kid in the world. But back then, he never sit still for a second. And I would cry because I couldn't hold him and I couldn't chase him. And I knew I was in a self-imposed crisis. I was smart enough to know what I shouldn't be doing, but I was so powerless that I couldn't do anything about it. And that's hell. That's living in hell on earth. And then here's a side-by-side photo. This was maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. So you could just sort of see there's a difference there. This is me and my sisters and my sister-in-laws at a family occasion, probably much like the holidays. You know, I had to drink a lot to get through those events because I showed up at those events not thinking of what I could bring to the occasion, but thinking of what I was going to get out of it. And I would always be on the short end. That's what it felt like. Showing up that way, I came ready with my resentments. They were in my pocket, ready to go. Everything that anybody ever did to disappoint me was right there, right here, like right here. I kept it very close. I drank a lot at those events and I ate a lot. And I felt like there was a wall in between the people that loved me. You know, that's a painful way to show up at your family event. And here are two more side-by-sides. Although the picture in the gray, I was recovered already. My body just hadn't caught up yet. But I was recovered. And this is actually a really happy picture of me and my mom. My husband and I made a big, beautiful affair for my daughter. It was her bas mitzvah. And we had this big, beautiful party with loads of food. There was a room for dessert, an entire room that was just for dessert. There was open bars. There was past hors d'oeuvres. There was so much to eat. None of it quelled me. I was so content with my small little plate, you know, that I think I ate the same thing there that I probably eat just about any time I go out, which is a piece of fish, a vegetable, and a salad, you know, and it didn't matter that I was paying for everything there. I actually felt present. I didn't show up with resentment. I felt attached to all the people that I was inviting to come And here's a more recent picture of mom and I, just to sort of show, you know, what we're like today. And this is me, you know, in a normal, healthy body for a great number of years now. I always say every single one of those dresses fits me, which is miraculous. I just go in the closet and pull them out and wear them without worrying. And for someone who has dieted her entire life, that is like an incredible miracle, not to be worried that anything I need to wear tomorrow is going to fit me in my closet. And just to sort of show that, I wore that dress recently. One of the dresses in the other picture before, I was supposed to wear something else and it was too cold that day. And I pulled this dress out and it fit. And here's me with my siblings and my mom and my sister-in-law. And I certainly don't feel that wall between them anymore, which is really how I have to show up at all holiday occasions with the wall down. Here's another like side by side, me and my family years ago and thus more currently. And my husband and I side by side as well. So, and we still go out to dinner sometimes. But like I said, I eat pretty much the same thing. Doesn't really matter where I am, what I do. So those are the pictures, and hopefully, you know, that's like enough to sort of get your, I say like whet your appetite, like listen in a little bit. So I want to talk about like, what does it mean to be abstinent throughout the holidays? And I kind of smiled when I read the topic because I thought it's the same as I do on any day, you know, and I think that's, I'm bodily and mentally different from other people. And so my recovery, my program doesn't take a break. It doesn't take a vacation. I have something that is permanent, progressive, and fatal. Much like, you know, any other illness, any other disease. And you would think like, okay, let's talk about like if I had diabetes, right? I would never think for a minute that I wouldn't have to take my insulin, right? Or take my medication or do whatever I needed to do to live within the boundaries of having that disease, right? There are people who have other types of disorder, you know, other types of diseases and disorders too. And they take their medication. I have high blood pressure, by the way. It just seems to be genetic. I take that medication. It doesn't matter if it's Christmas, right? It doesn't matter what it is. And so the same holds true with my abstinence. It's not something that I can say, well, it's vacation time, so I'll loosen things up a bit. There is no loosening up. It's black. For me, it's black and white. It's really black and white. So first, I think it's important that we even define abstinence for this. Like, and we can find the definition to abstinence. It's in the doctor's opinion. On XXIV, it says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. So I have an allergy, okay? And that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, okay? And once having, you know, formed the habit, found they cannot break it, lost their self-confidence, their self-reliance on things human, their problems pile up and then become astonishingly difficult to solve. So, okay, so let's really like hear this part again. I can never safely use it in any form at all. And in my book, that's highlighted in any form at all. So, you know, listen, everybody has different allergies. And I'll speak from my own experience. I have an extremely sensitive allergy to sugar. I would say most compulsive overeaters I'm going to kind of whisper it all. Mostly compulsive overeaters have it. I think it is probably a common thread. I've got other things that I am also seriously allergic to with food, and that varies from people to people. I can't eat flour. I can't eat any kind of fake flours. I can't. There's lots of things in any form at all. And so what does that mean through the holidays? Well, if any form at all means, and I'll tell you for myself, since I don't eat sugar, right? I don't eat sugar. That means that I don't eat marinades. That meat might be marinated. Like if I'm going to somebody's house for a holiday dinner, I can't just wing it and show up there and believe that they're preparing their foods in ways that are okay for me. I can't. Because I can't have it in any form at all. So if I have a problem with a specific ingredient, I used to hear people say, well, I don't eat sugar recreationally. Okay, that is not in agreement with what the doctor's opinion tells me. I don't understand what you mean by recreationally, right? So sugar, if my problem is with sugar, if my problem is with that particular ingredient, then I can't have it if it's in cakes, and I can't have it if it's in a salad dressing, right? And I can't have it if they use it, you know, to, I don't know, that it's in some ingredient that they put on their chicken before, in any form at all. So what does that mean for me? Well, if I'm showing up at somebody's house for the holidays, I make sure that I'm not going to trigger my allergy. Because see, here's the thing. I'm not as in much danger at their house. I might be able to eat in a way that looks abstinent. But if I eat something that's off my plan, I will come home and eat. I will come home and eat. And that that for me is a guarantee. So I need to be very careful about what I'm consuming at people's homes. The other definition of abstinence is the action of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. So I've heard people say things like, it made me laugh. Someone said, well, they're not abstinent. They're abstinent from their alcoholic ingredients, but they're overeating still. Okay, that's not abstinent. It's not abstinent because there's more than, it's not just not eating. Look, if I sat down tonight and I ate an entire chicken, right? An entire side of beef. Well, no, those aren't my alcoholic foods, but that's not abstinent, right? So I personally need to weigh and measure my food. Not everybody does, you know, that there's variety there. I do. So if that is my truth, if that's how I refrain from compulsive eating and for me, overeating, right? And compulsive food behaviors for me is spontaneous eating, grazing eating, not having a clear, this is the end of the meal kind of eating. Those are behaviors for me. Standing up and just sort of picking, and it goes on endlessly. That's a compulsive food behavior. Well, I can't do that at a holiday event either then. Right? If I can't do that at home, then I can't do that anywhere. And here's the problem, though, is that lack of knowledge is not my dilemma. Like, I know this information, but it's lack of power. Lack of power is my real problem. So I can know 100% that I'm unable to eat, right? That I'm unable to eat that way. And I still lack the capacity to act in ways in which are in agreement to this information. So just me telling you this isn't enough to actually get you through the holidays abstinently. It's not, right? I know the only thing that keeps me abstinent on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Christmas, New Year's, birthdays is a relationship with God. That's it. Remember, it's step one. Nothing except a miracle. I require a miracle. So at all times, I have to be working on this relationship, strengthening and maintaining this relationship that I have with this creator that can keep me safe and protected. And then if I have that working relationship, then all the knowledge that I'm being delivered about my disease and about my treatment, I can actually hold on to and apply. But without this relationship with God, it's like, it's sort of like pouring it, you know, into the colander. It all pours right through me. Very little gets stuck inside. So I must have this relationship with God. Which means I've got to be working the steps. So, you know, if you're looking on maintaining your abstinence through the holidays, well, whatever step you're on, do not start resting on your laurels. Consistently work as if it's any other day. Like, you know, we say we work like our hair is on fire. And if you're living in steps, you know, if you're recovered and you're living in steps 11 and 12, there's a lot of work in those three steps that you could be doing on the holidays. If you think that I'm going to go to a holiday and not have some 10 steps to do, holy heck, right? I will have loads of 10 steps to do. I'm going to require a lot of 11s, prayer, meditation, inviting God in, you know, quiet moments where I'm checking in, getting on my knees when I have to. You know, asking God to come in and help me here. And 12, you know, working with others for sure in the holidays. But also a big part of step 12 is the application of these principles in all our affairs. So I take all the principles that I learned in the steps. And when I show up at family functions and on holiday events, I am utilizing those principles. I'm practicing them in all of my affairs. Right? With my, you know, mom, with my sister, with my colleagues, with everybody around me, whatever those principles that I've learned, and I've learned them in the steps, I practice them when I'm with my family. And that way, that glass wall that I said was sort of up between me and them is gone. It's eradicated, right? Because I'm the one, it was a self-imposed crisis. I put myself in that wall. No one did it but me. Right. So also in the doctor's opinion on XXVI, it says all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been by any treatment with which we are familiar permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. So I always say, like, that's like one of my favorite paragraphs ever, because it tells me that I am different from other people, from the rest of the world, that I will be mixing with those people. Right, on holidays, but make no mistake, I might physically look like I belong, like I'm normal, but I am not. I am quite different. I am bodily and mentally different from other people. And so what I tell people, and it's a really good exercise, is take a piece of paper right now and fold it in half. And this idea about being different, distinct, means that on one half of the page, I'll describe me, right? Someone like me. One half of the page, I am a woman. I cannot start eating without developing the phenomenon of craving. and I can't have it in any form at all, right? And I have to eat in ways that are working towards and maintaining a healthy body weight, so I can't overeat. Okay, what does that mean? So no matter what, my food is abstinent, I weigh and measure it, right? Okay, I'm a woman who has to do those things. I'm also somebody who can't show up at an event with resentment. I'm also somebody who can't live riddled in fear. I'm also a woman who has to get on her knees and invite God in hard situations. I have to spend 30 minutes, quiet prayer and meditation every day, no matter what. You know, I also say, you know, here sits before you a woman that's going to be 53 that has to write down exactly what she's going to eat each day and tell another grown-up. I have to report to another grown-up on a daily basis precisely what I'm going to eat. Nothing like having a little humility about that one, right? And I'm also someone who, if I have to make a change, I require inviting another human being in. Like, I've got to let my sponsor know X, Y, and Z, I can't have it, they don't have it, or blah, blah, blah. Here's what I'm going to have instead. That's who I am. I know my truth about me, right? I have to work with others no matter what day it is. I mean, I say have to. All of these things are really I get to now. But I'm on this particular side of the page, right? And then there's the rest of the world. They just show up at Christmas events and they don't have to ask the hostess what they're serving. And they don't have to come prepared. And they don't have to weigh and measure, right? They can be mad at their boss for weeks at a time. They can gossip. They can stand in the corner and like whisper with their sister about their sister-in-law, right? They could do all sorts of other things. And they're not going to kill themselves with food when they go home, right? Now, my problem is that sometimes on family events, I forget that this can never be permanently eradicated. That fold in the paper, that mark in the sand, no matter what I look like, it doesn't change. So the problem that I might have is when I think I can hang out on the other side of the page and I dip my toe in there for a second, right? And that can take me to ruin. That can take me to ruin. But here's the good news, right? I think if you're here and you're leaning in, you're probably on the same side of the page with me. So I'm not alone. I'm not alone in this experience. And I have a mission, right? I have a very important work to do. It's to help the people that live on that side of the page, right? That's my job. That's what I do. So you want to be abstinent throughout the holidays. You have real respect for your disease and for your treatment. You know, I had a sponsor who told me, you plan, you prepare, you protect, and you pray, right? Those are like those four P's, you know, plan your food, plan it, prepare it. I've got things ready to go. I always bring beautiful, gorgeous salads to other people's homes. I'm not embarrassed to show up with it. Plenty for other people, right? I just bring it. It looks gorgeous. It looks like a rainbow. I protect it, right? I'm real careful about what I need to eat, and I pray. I pray before those family occasions, and here's what I pray. That I find who I'm supposed to be helpful to. That's what I ask God before I go. God, give me the strength to do your work. Show me who you want me to help today. Put that person in front of me, please. And then when I show up at these family events, that's my mission. I am looking for the person who I could be helpful towards. Might have nothing to do with compulsive overeating. It might just be the person who I say, like, I look for the most socially awkward person in the room. The person who, like, people are avoiding, right? How about I sit next to that person and I'm nice? How about I'm just warm and welcoming and friendly? You could do that, right? You know, I say when you go to family events, don't, here's some things not to say. Don't show up and say things like, oh, I'm trying to be good. Like, huh? First of all, trying tells them, when you say I'm trying, what you're really telling them is, convince me not to be good. I'm not really serious about this, right? And this other thing too, of this good idea versus not being good, this is not a morality issue. People who are eating are not bad. If they're like me and they're eating, they're sick, but they're not bad. And if they're like everybody else, they're just enjoying a holiday. Certainly nothing bad about that. So I never say that I'm being bad, you know, or being good. I don't apologize for what I need to do. You know, I also realize that most people aren't really interested in what I'm eating anyway. They're really not. They offer me something. They don't need a whole dialogue about what I can eat and what I can't eat. And, oh, I don't eat this because this has that. And I don't eat. Nobody is interested. That is not useful. Nobody cares. You know what I say? Oh, no, thank you. That's about it. It's so quickly done. When you're offered something and you say no, thank you, what are they going to say? You must? You know, I say, oh, that looks so lovely. No, thanks. And that's it, right? You know, our problem is that we don't like to think, and more about alcoholism, it says, no person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. And the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And why would I share this at this particular thing? Because I must know that I am bodily and mentally different from my family and other people I might be sharing the holidays with. You know, because I don't have a mental defense, I say it's important for me to also know that I have a form of insanity. There's a mental problem here. There's a thinking problem. It's a form of insanity. And we're told that, you know, when they talk about whiskey and the milk, when Jim tells that little story in the Big Book about how he had a lot of knowledge about himself as an alcoholic. He had all reasons for drinking and not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk, right? So I show up at events and I might fall prey to a foolish idea that I can do something, right, with my food that is foolish. And it says here, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? So lack of proportion means that I make things less important that are crucially important, and I make things that are not so important the most important. I lack proportion. I don't see things in their proper perspective. So what does that mean? Well, if I'm more concerned with the possibility of offending the hostess by asking what she's serving or just bringing my own food, I'm afraid of, like, I might have bad manners, I might offend her. If I am placing that over my very health because my disease is fatal, then I lack proportion. Then I have an inability to think straight because nothing should come before my health, my well-being, right? If it's something I can do something about, then possibly pleasing another person should never be more important right? And how many times have I fallen prey into that, right? And I think that's a very common thing we've had. And I would think, you know, if you're struggling with that and you're a parent, think for a second, if your child had a deadly peanut allergy, you would never just show up at an event and assume that all the food was safe for your kid. And nor would you be worried about offending the hostess, because you would know that it's your responsibility to keep your child safe and protected. Well, hello, right? Let's take that same high regard that we would have for our children and apply it to ourselves, right? I am their mother. I better take care of my health if I can, to the best of my ability, right? So if I'm insane, my problem is, if I have a mental illness, and that's sort of what it's describing, this inability to think straight, this lacking of proportion, my problem is that I have this knowledge, and yet on my own strength, I lose the ability to apply it, right? And I think about it, I'm going to again use the medication analogy. People who have a mental illness are in the greatest danger sometimes when they feel great because they stop taking their medication. So if you are entering the holiday season feeling great, do not stop taking your spiritual medication, right? Any practice that you have been doing on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you surely should maintain and lean into Christmas morning, right? That might include, if you've got a commitment to a meeting, it might include participation in that meeting, or part of it at least, right? If you've got calls scheduled with sponsees, sponsors, those things should be in place. We need those structures to help us, you know, sustain our recovery throughout the holidays. And, you know, my phone will be on. My phone will be on. I will take calls and make calls. I will excuse myself when I need to, because I do have a family that I'm supposed to show up and be of service for and connected with. But I also have a very sincere responsibility. And I believe that I'm a distinct entity. I live on that side of the page, and it's my job to help those of us that also live on that side of the page. So thanks. With that, I'll pass, and happy to share. Thanks.